Time to say hello to our NHL insider, Chris Johnston, who joins us Tuesdays and Thursdays from Sportsnet and Sportsnet.ca. And CJ, wanted to bring you into a conversation we were having just before the break and get your take on it. You know, here the Vegas Golden Knights are in 3 years of being a franchise, a Stanley Cup final, a round one exit where they probably should have won, and a Western Conference final exit in five games. And in one hand, you know, they're this plucky expansion team and look what they've done, but on the other side they are probably internally now looking at themselves as, okay, we're a really good team, but we haven't won a Stanley Cup. I'm just curious as to how, as well a constructed team as Vegas is, enters the offseason with the disappointment of a five-game exit to the Dallas Stars. Where do you fall in on that conversation?
Well, I think that they're a team that's going to look at the way they ended these playoffs. I think they had 10 goals in their last eight games that weren't empty netters. And, you know, likely conclude, if they didn't already know, that, you know, I think that the priority should be to try to get an elite sniper on that team just to help the offense. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and poke many holes in what they've done because, you know, as you say, the record speaks for itself. You know, the playoffs are hard. It can come down to bounces and luck and injury health and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, I do think Vegas will look to upgrade where they can. They got some cap challenges, so, you know, anything that comes in, you know, in terms of being a sizable piece would probably mean someone would have to go. But, you know, they've had just an awesome three seasons. You know, it's not certainly no indictment on them, but, you know, at the same time, they have the same goals as everyone else in trying to win the Stanley Cup, and they haven't quite got there yet.
Is there a danger in making too big a change, or, you know, overreacting to a very small sample size, even though that sample size happened at the most important time of the season?
For sure. You know, I think that's would be true of any team here. You know, you don't want to, whether you went out in the play-in round or the first round, or you got to the conference final as Vegas did, I think that you have to proceed with a little bit of caution. And you know, so much of what they did worked out. You know, it was a bit controversial, I guess, or surprising when they, you know, replaced Gerard Gallant midseason with Pete DeBoer. You know, I think the results bear that out. You know, I know that there was some drama around the goaltending, but Robin Leonard, you know, finishes the playoffs with some pretty sparkling numbers. And, you know, they have, you bring back basically the same team. I think they have as good a shot as anyone in the Western Conference to, you know, get over the hump next year. You know, that being said, though, I do think that you know, it'd be crazy to call it impatience there. I mean, that they've existed for 3 years, but, you know, I know that Bill Foley, their owner, is anxious to try to win a cup. I think that they understand, you know, they have a team, you know, most of their players are a little older. You know, it's not a young team by any means. And so, you know, they do kind of, they're sort of in a window just because of the way that expansion draft worked. And they took a lot of guys that were around 25 at that time who are now about 28, getting up to 29. And you know, they've extended some of them to long deals. I mean, the time to be bold is now, I think, for Kelly McCrimmon and George McPhee. And, you know, it wouldn't surprise me in the least if they're involved in some interesting transactions this offseason.
As for the Dallas Stars, off to the Stanley Cup final. You were there for Game 5 yesterday. Three unanswered goals, including Gurianov's overtime winner. I talked to Elliot about this yesterday. We touched on it a little bit throughout the last couple of days. People were choosing Calgary to beat them. Certainly most were choosing Colorado and Vegas to beat them in the second and third round. Yet they've gotten through all of that to the point here they are in the Stanley Cup final. This is a pretty impressive, and I don't want to say odds-defying, but at least from the outside, it's kind of an odds-defying run.
Well, I think you can call it odds-defying because they've done it without their starting goaltender.
Fair.
And Ben Bishop, when healthy, is one of the best in the league. And so, you know, the fact that they've done it in that manner, I think, makes it somewhat odds-defying. You know, if there's one thing we saw during the regular season is that they were, you know, probably the best defensive team in the league. You know, they didn't score a lot of goals, but they certainly didn't give up much. They do a great job of taking away the dangerous areas in front of their goaltender. And, you know, that obviously sets you up for playoff success because the games aren't as wide open. I know their series with Colorado was a little bit of a, you know, not what you typically see with all the goals that happened in that series, and it was far more wide open. But, you know, I think that they were built to have this kind of playoff success. But, you know, that being said, I certainly didn't foresee this. You know, I didn't have to make picks all those rounds, but I probably would have picked against them the last two rounds if I had to. And so, you know, give them credit that they've managed to, you know, navigate the bubble, navigate everything that comes with it, and beat some pretty good hockey teams on their way to becoming the Western Conference champions. And, I guess we shouldn't sleep on them now, even though if Tampa gets through, I'll probably be thinking the Lightning are going to win that series.
Well, and that's just it. I mean, like, they'll likely be taking on Tampa Bay in the Stanley Cup final, and even if they don't win, but certainly if they do, just think of the degree of difficulty Dallas is going to have to over. Like, when you think of Colorado, Vegas, Tampa in succession, three back-to-back series, you don't see degree of difficulty quite like that all the time on a run to the Stanley Cup final.
No, I mean, those would be three 100-point teams if we played a full season, like, no doubt about it. I think that does lend credence to some conversations we had months ago or 2 months ago about an asterisk. I mean, they would be fully deserving champions if they went through those teams. And, you know, I don't think we're getting much of that conversation anymore anyway, when we've seen the way the intensity of these games have been played at and how much, other than the energy and the fans and all that, I mean, it looks like playoff hockey. And so, you know, that's a difficult road. I think it's good news for the Stars. They were able to finish it off last night because, you know, there's no guarantee that the Lightning are getting through today. And so, yep. You know, they're going to get a little bit extra rest before that Stanley Cup final starts. And, you know, they're going to be full value for having gotten there. But that's not good enough for Rick Bowness and his guys.
Your observations on the Eastern Conference final leading into an elimination game 5 tonight?
Well, it's a weird series because, you know, there's been some lopsided games and we'll throw game 1 right out of the mix in terms of the conversation. But I actually feel like it's actually been a little bit of a tight series. And so, you know, 3-1 looks commanding. You know, I certainly believe Tampa is the better team, but, you know, that doesn't come with any guarantees. You know, the Islanders play hard. And, you know, I think that this will be a difficult series for Tampa to close out. And, you know, we still don't really know what the status of Braden Point is. And I think it's a huge swing one way or the other for the Lightning, because I just think he's been that good in these playoffs. He's been a clear difference maker for them. And, you know, they played one game without him in the series, and that's when they lost. So, I don't have any sense if he's playing tonight or not. Okay. It wouldn't surprise me if he's not playing, though, just given the way we saw him end the last, you know, 9.5 minutes on the bench in game 4 on Sunday. And so, you know, this is they're in a great spot, and I think they're a great team, but, you know, this is where the playoffs get really challenging. It's just, as I mentioned before, sometimes it's bounces and luck and injuries and all those things that can be a difference maker. And you know, Tampa's fighting it right now if they're down Stamkos and Braden Point.
And just one quick question, because you had mentioned this early on in the conference finals when you got to Edmonton and relocated from Toronto to Edmonton. You said the crowd noise not as loud in the building as it was in Toronto. I don't know. This is just my observation on TV, but that pumped in crowd noise sounds louder and louder every game I watch on television. Is it? But you're in the building. Is it any difference inside Rogers Place in Edmonton?
No, it hasn't gotten different. So I think what you're hearing and what I'm hearing is two different things. I mean, it's still pretty quiet in there, and we've actually seen some feisty games, especially, you know, the Islanders and Tampa, and, you know, a fair bit of jawing going back and forth. And I can't hear everything, but I can hear much more of it than I ever would in a normal setting.
Chris Johnson's with us, our NHL insider, Tuesdays and Thursdays here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Your reaction to that 7-year, $42 million deal Minnesota signs with defenseman Jonas Brodin?
Well, it's an interesting contract because, you know, Jonas Brodin, someone who's, I had his name, I'd say, lightly in trade rumors. You know, the thought that if you know, Minnesota wasn't going to be able to extend him, that you know, he might be someone that they would move. And I would suggest you giving him that contract and including a no-move clause in it pretty much guarantees that won't happen. And, you know, he's one of those guys. He doesn't produce a lot of points, but, you know, a very good defensive player. And, you know, I guess it's sort of one of the first major moves that we've seen Bill Guerin make as a general manager of this team. You know, I still don't have a sense, is he going to go young? Is he going to try to rebuild or what? But in this case, you know, he's taken what would have been a pretty valuable trade piece if he was willing to move on from Brodin and extended him and made him part of what's going to be there going forward.
Does it, a lot of people, and this is a Calgary-centric thing, but I think you can apply it to any team. You know, here's a 27-year-old who is going into the final year of his contract and he signs this deal. A lot of people, for instance, here in Calgary immediately jump to, well, that's the market for TJ Brody, who's 3 years older and going into unrestricted free agency. Does this set a market for anybody right now in your mind?
Well, I think it's a fair comparison with Brody, to be honest. And he is older, so you, maybe you're not looking at that kind of term on his next deal. But, you know, there's certainly a lot of value to that player. And you know, I think we're all a little bit waiting to see what the market is for every position, just because, you know, we know what you know, defensemen with certain platform numbers got in years past, but there's no guarantee that's going to continue in the flat cap era and with, you know, the uncertainty of the coming seasons here. And so, you know, this is the first contract, I think, that looks like one that would look like, you know, what we would have expected had he signed it last summer, for example, before any of us had ever heard of the novel coronavirus. So, you know, I think it's a fair comparison for Brody, and, you know, he might end up having to go to the open market in order to get that kind of deal. Mm-hmm. You know, I'd be wary a little bit of the term, you know, just because of his age. But, you know, it's a fascinating season. You know, I feel like we can handicap this stuff a lot easier in years gone by. I mean, to me,
for sure,
we're kind of learning on the fly here. And you know, this contract looked like ones, as I said, that would happen before, but that's not a guarantee that every player will be able to say the same thing, you know, after the next few weeks.
Yeah, it really is. We're flying blind in so many ways when it comes into 2020 free agency, October free agency on top of everything else. Speaking of which, sounds like Braden Holtby will be getting to free agency as per Washington's general manager.
Yeah, and, you know, I think that makes sense for Braden. You know, they've got a really good young goaltender, Nilya Samsonov, already there. They have some cap challenges, like a lot of teams. Stop me if you've heard that before. And we're entering this season where there's a lot of other goaltenders available. So, you know, I think it's reasonable at this stage, as good of a marriage as it's been for Holtby and the Capitals over the last number of years, for Braden to see what's out there for him on the open market, maybe a job that includes more starts than he might get next season with the Capitals. And I think Washington has some comfort from knowing that, you know, there's a lot of other options for them in moving on at this time. And so, you know, I don't think it's a 100% slam dunk that he's gone. You know, maybe that, you know, Braden tests the market for a day or two and finds that what's out there isn't too much different than what he could get in Washington. You know, I think he would be open to going back and remaining with the Capitals. But, you know, at this point in time, the sides are kind of focused on seeing what the market brings come October 9th and going from there.
It's not like he had a great postseason. Regular season numbers weren't his best. In fact, last couple of years, the numbers have kind of slipped since the Stanley Cup. Does he go into free agency knowing who else is going to be part of this group? And as you've talked about, an unprecedented group of goaltenders in free agency and potentially in trades, like, does he go in as a top target for teams?
I kind of see him in the next layer below the top targets. I mean, we still don't know yet what's going to come of Robin Lehner. You know, if that rumored deal in Vegas is done or not, you know, I would have him in the top tier group. I'd have Jacob Markstrom in the top tier group if he doesn't get extended by Vancouver ahead of that point in time. You know, Corey Crawford is probably there, but of course there's some injury concerns with him. And so, teams might shy away from him for that reason. And then you have the list of guys you could trade for that includes Matt Murray, perhaps Frederick Anderson. You know, Marc-Andre Fleury is a possibility, especially if Lehner goes. I mean, it's such a game of musical chairs right now. You know, I would have Holtby, though, below those first two or three names I mentioned, I think, at this point in time. And you know, look, most teams, I think, are going to go into next season knowing, you know, if there's a season, we don't know what it's going to look like, but it's likely to be compressed with more back-to-backs and 3-4 situations. You know, this playoffs is, I think, in many ways laid waste even more to the idea that you need one solid goaltender. I mean, I think it's more apparent than ever that you need two. And so, you know, for Braden Holtby, I think he'll be viewed as a 1A, 1B kind of goaltender with whoever signs him. And you know, you're looking at probably seeing him split starts, you know, next season.
Chris Johnson is our NHL insider, Sportsnet and Sportsnet.ca. The Flames officially made Jeff Ward their permanent head coach yesterday, taking the interim tag off of him. This is something that we'd all been eyeing and watching for. Your reaction to that news?
Well, I think it's a good decision. You know, I think that there was some measurable progress there. And look, I also view that the next season or two for the Flames is a little bit of a question mark, just in terms of where they go, you know, how much change there might be. Obviously, I think there's at least some appetite for that change, but no guarantee it happens. And keeping Jeff Ward around, you know, you're keeping some stability. And you know, it was a short-term contract, I believe a 2-year deal he signed. And so, you know, it's not, I think it's, to me, that's, we're happy with the relationship, but we're not sure where everything's going right now. And, you know, that's the way we all should kind of be in 2020 with any business dealings we're doing. I think it's a very uncertain period in history. And you know, I think it does make sense for Calgary to reward him for, you know, the way the season improved and you know, the circumstances, obviously, that he took that job over and, you know, kept things going and got them to the playoffs. And, you know, maybe if there's not an injury or you get a couple more saves, you know, Calgary has a longer playoff run than they did under him. So, you know, to me, it was sort of a a logical conclusion to the couple weeks that they spent looking at, you know, what might be out there for them and what was best. And, you know, we'll see where it goes from here, because he's still got to kind of prove it, as most coaches do every day.
The big criticism in this market, CJ, has been that the Flames didn't go out and chase some of the big coaching names available. And I see, it's over $4 million a year is what it sounds like Peter Laviolette is getting in Washington with that coaching news today. And it's a cap-friendly reporting, just under $1 million is what Jeff Ward is making on his deal. And it's just, that's never an area the Flames have really put a ton of assets into. That's never an area they've spent really big on. So I wasn't expecting them to go down that road right from the get-go, especially knowing the economic circumstances that everybody's living in right now. But that has definitely been a criticism. I'm curious as to your response to that type of criticism.
Well, I mean, it's a fair criticism if people think they should do that, but it's real money, you know, and this is a tough time. We don't know if they'll have any fans in the Saddle Dome next year, half fans, quarter fans. You know, we'd need a crystal ball and Nostradamus to figure out what next season is going to look like. And so the revenue for all these teams is not, I'm confident saying the revenue will not be where it's been in years past, mm-hmm. you know, in the coming season and probably even the one after that. And so, you know, if you're signing those guys, it's a lot of money. And, you know, I think you'd probably rather them be spending that money on the players, you know, all things considered. And, you know, just because Jeff Ward isn't making as much as Peter Laviolette doesn't necessarily mean there's the huge gap between them. You know, I mean, obviously Laviolette's earned that money because he's taken a number of teams to Stanley Cup final. He's won a lot of games. He's got, you know, more of a proven track record as a head coach, but you don't always get what you pay for when you sign coaches just as players. And mm-hmm. so, you know, I think that it's obviously a decision that's made carefully, and, you know, fans have every right to be angry, but right now, you know, the team, along with teams all around the league, you know, don't have as much resources to work with, and I think they have to be, you know, smart with what they do have.
Yeah, and I'm with you 100% on that one, for the record. But on in saying that, what do you make of the fit for Laviolette in Washington?
Well, I mean, what an acknowledgement that they should have probably spent that $4 million on Barry Trotz a couple of years ago. But you know, I do like the fit. I mean, this guy has done it time and time again in you know, every place he's been. You know, winning a cup with Carolina, taking Philadelphia and Nashville to a final. And, you know, obviously Washington's looking at the core of their team and seeing a 2-year, maybe 3-year at the most window to try to win another cup with, you know, Backstrom, Kuznetsov, Ovechkin as the centerpieces of their team. And so, you know, I do think they made an error in judgment by, you know, not renewing Trotz after winning the cup in 2018. But this is a way to at least atone for it somewhat, and to bring someone experienced in who I think will have the attention of those players. You know, Laviolette can be a hard driving guy, but he's, you know, he's pretty unanimously liked by the guys who play for him. And so, you know, I think the key for him is building up his relationship, because it is a veteran team, and ultimately whatever happens is going to rest on the backs of those guys. And if they can get the job done again. And, you know, I like that ownership group is committed to going all in on the core, because it might take a long time before you have players that good again wearing Capital sweaters.
Final thought for you, my friend, and that's on kind of the one league to another comparison. And I always love these big picture, future looking questions with you, because you've been covering this stuff going all the way back to mid-March. But the NFL has completed 1 week of their season with traveling, with, in two cases, fans in buildings. More fans are going to be allowed in different cities as the weeks progress here. I'm just curious, and I know you talked a little bit about it on Saturday on Headlines with Elliot, but how much is the NHL paying attention? How much can and will the NHL learn from how the NFL is conducting their business?
Well, the NHL sees this as an advantage, I think, that they have a little bit of time here with which to step back, you know, once we get the cup handed out in the next 2 weeks or so, and, you know, look at what happens elsewhere. And the NFL is a huge test bubble for that, just because of the way their season's working, because they have some, you know, areas that are allowing fans and others that aren't right now, but are sort of willing to look at it as the season goes along. And I think that it's a bit of a test case of sorts, you know, for the league to be able to see what happens there. And so they'll be watching very closely, just as they'll be keeping an eye on the European hockey leagues that are, you know, all getting started in the next couple weeks, and, you know, college sports that are going to get going. But I do think the NFL, you know, does offer a bit of a window into what happens. And quite honestly, you know, in talking to people on both sides of the discussions around next season, I don't think anyone has a clear idea what it's going to be. And so they really do have to be in tune with, you know, what's happening elsewhere. It might give them some idea of what they can pull off. And, you know, obviously the goal is to be as safe as you can, and it's to, you know, get the business back to normal as soon as you can. And that you know, involves fans coming to games. And so, you know, they'll, as they have been since March, keep an eye on the spread of the virus everywhere, but also, you know, what, you know, governments and health officials in the various areas of particularly the U.S. are allowing. And you know, Canada is almost a separate discussion as it was earlier. It's a complicating factor for next year. It's why I do think there is a chance we see an all-Canadian division, just because I don't know what the travel restrictions are going to be at that point in time, but certainly the NFL's experience with getting people in the building, how that works, how safely they're able to do it, will inform, I think, the NHL, but what it can hope to do in 2020-21.
As always, appreciate it. Great stuff, CJ. We'll talk to you Thursday. Enjoy Game 5 of the Eastern Conference Finals tonight.
Will do. Thanks, Pat.